Hey there, welcome to Turn Back the Clock. This is episode 28. Your two co-hosts here, I'm Adam, that's Dylan. Dylan, how's it going, man?
Just fantastic, Adam. Really excited for this episode.
You know, it's funny, I get, because as you know, this goes out as a podcast too on my podcast, and I get messages all the time of people that never watch anything on YouTube, but they send me messages like, man, I love Dylan, you know, like they've never seen you or anything. Because they don't watch YouTube, but they listen to the podcast and they're like, what a great guy. I love Dylan. Like, I get messages all the time on Instagram.
Really? That. Dude, that's it.
They only listen to podcasts. They don't watch YouTube.
They sound like how I was before I got on YouTube, before I made the jump to actually watch YouTube. It was like, no, I don't want to do another app. I don't want to do anything else. Like, I like listening to my podcast. So, hey, thank you guys all for those messages. That's insane. Thanks for telling me, Adam. Appreciate it.
Yes. So this is the topic today. I got it across the screen here. Should firsts matter in the hobby? So we each have, you got, what we're doing five, right?
I got five rounds, yeah.
Five items in our collection, five cards that are firsts. We'll go into what that means. But before we show what we got and talk about them, let's talk about firsts, you know, in the hobby. The first of something could be the first. I have a couple different takes on it, but like the first of a set, or first of a brand, the first Topps cars, 1952 Topps. What do you think that they? I mean, they do command a premium normally, right? Like if it's an iconic first of something, everything else being equal, it's gonna sell for more and be more desired than something that it, like the second year of it. Do you think that that's justified? Should first be as important as they are in the hobby?
Absolutely. I think having first of anything. And what was so fun about doing this in my brain for the last couple of weeks when we came up with the topic was like going into my vintage cards and remembering what ones were first, what things did Topps, because I'm a Topps guy, that's what I'm going to be talking about. What did they do first? What was this? When did the first of this come out? And I'm like, man, I should really like concentrate my collection on those ones because of the importance of it. And for me, I think that is truly really important for the hobby. And I do think, you know, in vintage, they don't command a lot for the first of what I'm going to share. But should they? Yes. And I think in modern, it really matters what was first. And I think more than just having a command of the first Topps finest set ever, it's the, you know, being the year that commands that, it causes us collectors to, when it lasts for so long, it gives us this reason to go after an entire run of that set. And we're going to dive into that. And yes, I think absolutely first of everything, not everything, but yeah, I think it demands, just like the rookie card, it demands a premium, and I think rightly so. And I think it also demands the respect when it lasts for so long, the lineage of it. And that's what separates, we'll talk about it more later, but the modern, for me, how I approach the modern is like the lineage and the history of these parallels, because there's so many in existence now, and everyone gets so frustrated. And I go, it's not that difficult, right? We can go after certain ones that have this history of Topps cards that we love or baseball cards that we love and go down it. So I know you have different choices, which is going to be awesome. So yes, what is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think like you look at certain things and like some of them are like a perfect storm. So it could be, here's a couple examples, like modern stuff, 2012 Prism, 2012 for basketball and football, because baseball is unlicensed for that. But basketball and football in 2012 Prism, the first year of Prism cards for those sports, they sell for huge premiums. And then sometimes, you know, you have players who their rookie card is also in that set. So it's the first of the brand. And then it's also like a rookie card of a notable player. Then you see like huge prices. It's like a double whammy with that. And then, you know, you got, yeah, like with baseball, like you said, 1993 Finest for refractors, right? That was the debut of Finest and the first refractors. So they command huge premiums. And then you got even like Topps Chrome from 1996 across, you know, basketball, baseball. I just recently picked up a Pedro 96 Topps Chrome. I haven't gotten it yet, but I was excited to get that. But
dude, we're just thinking the same thoughts.
Yeah. Like, it's just amazing the premium that it commands. It's not Pedro's rookie card. There's nothing special about the year for him other than it's that brand. It's the brand and like his whatever 96 card of another brand that it's not the first year of sells for way less. So yeah, I think it's cool because you never know either. Like the cards that are coming out now, when you look back 20 years or whatever, whatever the brand becomes, that's like iconic cards from that year, regardless of the player, will be chased after because people want to complete that set, you know? So, and I love that we'll probably have, I have some vintage here, but I have some modern too. And I expected you'd have, I don't know what you have, but I expected you'd have some vintage examples too.
I have three vintage and two modern. And you know what? To go back on that, like they're like rookie cards of the set. So 93 finest, yeah, they demand a premium because that's like a rookie. It's like the rookie card. It's like the rookie set. How would you say? Like it's the rookie set of finest. And the refractor in that exactly too. And the 96 that you talk about, I love that. You were like, you bought a Pedro. Did you just buy that this week or like?
I got it. It was about 3 weeks ago, but it had to go the authentication to the vault, the PWCC vault. And then I got to let it sit there for, you know, I have to pay more if I get it now. And then I have to wait 3 months and then it's way less. So
don't pay the taxes on it.
It's not a ton of money, but it was a couple hundred bucks, I think.
Okay.
$300. So, but you know, that's a lot for a Pedro card from 96. That's, nothing crazy. So
yeah, that's epic. So, that's epic.
But yeah, it's because brand is so big. Brand is huge in the hobby, and a lot of people don't understand that until they've been in it a while. Like new people coming in, like get confused at that. Like why does, you know, this card looks as cool as this card, and there's just as many of this card as this other one, but why is this one selling for 10 times the price? And it's the history. It's the history of the brand, and it doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes to people unless you kind of know that and take some time to learn that.
Yep, I agree.
So, all right, we each have five. Would you like to go first with your first in your collection?
Okay, sure. I'll go first for the first. Yes. Okay, so as you guys know, I'm a Topps guy. I love Topps. I love Bowman. I love going after just standard Topps vintage cards. And the first time ever that Topps came out in 1958 with the All-Star cards.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love everything about the All-Star cards. And they had both colors. So you got blue for the National League and red for the American League. And they did break up their tradition a couple of years, but to this day, they still have All-Star cards. And this is the very first year they ever did it. And still to this day, maybe the best designed year ever. I mean, I love 1960. Probably more for the overall design, but the way these pop, this would be my favorite All-Star in it. And it's the first. And these don't demand a premium, which is awesome. They actually are way cheaper than all the regular base cards. So, like, I just bought this Ted Williams, found it centered. It's beautiful copy. I had a 7 and a 6 that didn't look nearly as good as this. And I bought this for $80. So there's no premium. I wasn't paying any premiums for anything. And yeah, the same thing with this Hank Aaron is probably like $50. So love that. That's a first.
And I was going to pick that. I was going to pick a card, but I was like, you know what? Dylan's going to do that. I guarantee it. Cause I just knew. So I held off on that. But like, for example, Stan Musial first, Topps card, right? In that, I believe. And it's also the first All-Star set. So again, I don't know if it commands a premium. I've never really looked at that. But I don't think it's that expensive of a card, but you got kind of a double first on that from that.
Yeah, set. The stand. I don't have the stand. I sold mine because it's off centered and I haven't found a centered copy since. I've seen a couple, I just didn't jump at them. That would have been a double combo right there. First for stand. Yes.
But okay. Yeah, I love those All-Star cards, man. Those are awesome. All right. So let me see if I can do solo here for me. Okay, there we go. So this is, according to Baseball Cardpedia, this is the first licensed Major League Baseball product with pack pulled autographs. So this is 1990. This was one autograph card per pack 1996 Leaf Signature Series. And this is a Pedro Martinez one. They have different versions. This is a gold stamped one. They have, this is out of 500 that they made, not numbered, but if you look it up, they made 500 of each one. So according, this is, you know, the first set they did one per pack, but then at least according to Baseballpedia, they said it was the first licensed MLB autographs pack pulled. Now, I know they did that with like old, like retired players from like Score and stuff that was licensed, but I'm thinking what they needed.
Oh, because I was like, what about 90? And yeah. I'm like, that makes sense.
I think they're saying like, players, you know, playing all the players licensed by the player. Yeah. Or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. Leaf 1996 Leaf Signature Cards. That's the name of the set.
See, I learned something. I love it. That now I have to go get one.
And it's just a cool design too. I just it's got the blue, the clouded and nice. And you got like parallels in it too. You can go with the bronze, I think, silver, and then gold, and the gold being the fewest, you know. So you get
what is that? 1988 tops, and I think 89 tops, or at least 88 tops. It has the cloud look that looks just like one of those. I probably have one on the wall back here, within reach. But yes, that's cool. How much does something like that, how much did that Pedro cost you out of the 500?
Because it's the gold one, I probably overpaid, but I think I paid.
Well, what do they normally go for? You know,
I got $200, $150, $200, okay. Something like that. But you can get the silver ones for like silver or bronze. It's still an autograph. So, but you know, I'm stupid. So I go for the gold one.
I mean, aren't we all like, that makes a lot of sense when we get to later picks. So with that said, like, $150. If you buy a Pedro autograph from an ultra modern pack, it's probably still going to cost you $100. To me, the premium there is not even, that's nothing. That's not even a premium. That's just like an older vintage card. An older Mickey Mantle is worth more than a newer Mickey Mantle, as it should be. And to me, that is relatively a very fair price, in my opinion.
Yeah. And again, it's like a notable set because of it being the first of what it is. So
that's awesome.
That'll be a good example. All right. So what do we got number two for you?
Oh yeah. Number two, another one of my favorites, as you guys know, probably my all time favorite type of cards. Well, there's no other type of cards I like more than these combo cards. 1961 Topps is the very first year they ever did leaders cards. And this happens to be the year that Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris went for the record. This shows the prior year where Roger Maris had 39 home runs, I think I'm reading, and Mickey had 40. So prior year, Mickey won the title and Roger came in second. But to know that 61 Topps is the first year that leaders cards came out, it makes me want to go get all the 60. I knew this before I did a video on these first, like a couple years ago, but you forget. And when I went back to look for this, I wanted to double check. So I grabbed my giant book that shows every Topps card ever made. I have pictures of every Topps card ever made. And I wanted to double check. And yes, 61. So it makes me want to go back and get all the leaders cards from 61. I love this. There's no premium on it. And that's the difference between modern cards and vintage. There is zero premium on this and on leaders cards in 61 and all-star cards in 58 than there is in like 62, 3, and so on and so forth. And some years don't have them, but yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool factoid to know.
Yeah, and that's a great question for the comment section for people who watch this. Or through the podcast, send me a message on Instagram. Let me know, should it matter as far as, you know, are you willing to pay more for a card of a player you collect or whatever, if it's the first of something like we're talking about here? Do you think it's crazy that people do that or would you do it? Yeah, so let us know. I'm interested to hear people's opinion on that too. All right. So the other so as a player collector for a lot of the cards that I collect are player run based. I collect Larry Bird, as many of you know. And like, there's examples of like this in vintage baseball too, where, you know, Pete Rose, Nolan Ryan, their rookie card is a dual player card. Same with Larry Bird, where his rookie card is with Magic Johnson and Dr. J on the 1980 Tops. But then his second year card from Tops is his first solo card. So the first solo card right here, and this one happens to be autographed. So this is a card that, you know, commands a premium because it's his first card that he was, you know, on by himself. Whereas let's say his rookie card was a solo card too in 1980. I think it's still a great card, but I don't think this card would be chased after as much as it is because this would be his second solo card. So the first solo card is a first in the hobby. And, you know, we see, I think a lot of people that we know and listen to, I've heard many people say they'd rather have like Pete Rose's second year card and Johnny Bench, or no, is it? No, I know Nolan Ryan. Yeah. They prefer the second year solo card over the over
bench two. Bench two for sure.
Yeah. So Bird's in that category too. Same with Magic Johnson. And a side note on that, it's funny because we are in a text group with John Mangini, and he is just finding out now that the Magic Johnson card of this, of the same year, same idea, first solo card. He has it in a PSA 10. And when he when he found out that it was selling for $50,000 in 2021, he almost had a heart attack because he had no idea. And he's
dude, I don't know if I missed. I remember reading that text, but I wasn't. Dude, now I'm like, oh, my brain just firing off, going, wow, he's just like, no way, I blew it. Oh my gosh.
Because you know you can get a 9 in this card or an 8 that looks exactly the same as the 10, pretty much. And it's I don't know, $100 if you get an 8 or whatever or less, and then you're talking thousands and thousands if for the 10. So it's a perfect scenario to upgrade by downgrading and make a lot of money to use on other cards too. But it's a pretty interesting card there because it's a tough card to find in PSA 10. That's the reason the 10 commands that premium. So
yeah, those are pretty much notoriously off center because I had a Magic. I gave it to my nephew, but. Yep. I've seen so many off-centered versions of at least the Magic card. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's less than 100 of each one in a PSA 10, so it's still. Yep. So John, you can still make a lot of money on that card if you decide to trade it or sell it. So there you go,
dude. That's right up his alley. He needs to. I mean, I'm still predicting there's going to be another one of those big spikes. During that next spike, well, it's going to be different cards that spike most likely. Just like. Because people learn their lessons and things, but that could be one of them. But yeah, you just jettison that thing and he can go buy a Babe Ruth or he can go buy the Joe D that he always wanted. Dude, Adam, I love that you brought the solo card up because I'm just thinking like out loud, like anyone out there watching this, there's a million different ways to approach this exact question of first. Yep. There's so many different firsts. I made like we wanted to text each other. At least one of us, Adam, texted me first, so I didn't share mine. Hey, these are the 5 I'm using, thinking, man, there's not that many, but really there's just a million different firsts that you could do. And I love that you brought up the solo card.
Yeah, in the hobby, the people in the hobby decide over time what matters, what firsts matter, and like what firsts matter more than other firsts. So it's all up to the like consensus of the hobby, which I like. You know, I respect what other people think in this hobby and, you know, the opinions that really gain traction and gather together over time. Those are the first that get chased. So it's pretty cool to see. It's not something that happens right away.
Yeah, agreed. Well, with that all stated and said, my next option is just a really fun one that it is the first time Topps ever did this. And I don't think they've ever done it this way since. And I noticed this a couple years ago. I was just staring at my wall, maybe 3 years ago or something. And I was like, oh, wow. Because I always have all the Topps run from 52 all the way. Always on my wall. It used to be over here. Now it's in a different display. And one day I came across this. Well, it came up recently. I forgot who it was that commented on either a text that I'm on or a comment, but the first time Topps ever forgot or didn't notate that a player's position on a card was 1972 Topps. There was nowhere on the front of this card that says the position of this one. It happens to be 1972 Topps, Nolan Ryan. nowhere on the card that says where he plays. And I don't think there's a single top set to this day that has forgot to put that on the front. And I genuinely think they just kind of had a mind fart or something, because you really, they did it ever since. There might be a year or two after. I don't have the rest of them on my wall to like double check myself, but I just find it fascinating. I always found it fascinating that there is no denotion of where they played. So it is a first. Does it deem, you know, more, does it matter? No, it doesn't matter, but I thought it a fun fact. That a lot of people probably haven't noticed. So that's it.
I know. I never noticed that. So I just, I learned that. That's cool, man. I never thought of that either.
Dude, when I shared that on my channel, I'm like, no, this is going to blow everybody's mind. No one's ever seen this. No one even mentioned it in the comments. This is years ago. I was so bummed. I was like, dude, you guys, what?
See, guys, if you listen closely to Turn Back the Clock, you'll actually learn some things too sometimes, you know, not from me, but mainly Dylan. I love that. So the next one, I'm going vintage on this, and you know, tops. I love tops too. And so a player's first tops card, even if it's not a rookie card, their first tops card, I have a couple examples of this here, which my next one will be too, but this is here, I'll put it on the screen. This is Ted Williams' first tops card. So this is the 1954 tops number one card, and it's just a beautiful card. Awesome dual photo. Love the old school Red Sox logo, the orange background. And as you know, Dylan, Ted has two cards in this set, number one and then 250 something.
Yeah, 250 even.
Yep. I used to have both, but I ended up selling the 250 just because I needed.
No, you put it. You put it in that box that's behind me.
That's right.
As a giveaway in our turn back in our our box. Is that
what you told? That's funny. It's
that's very good. Awesome.
Yep. So I kept, I had to keep one of them. So I kept this one being, you know, it's a number one card. So it really is the first one. The other one technically is later in the set. So it's just interesting, you know, like 1954, he came in the league like in 1939 or whatever. And this was his first tops card. So.
Well, what I love that you shared that, because I had two forever, the orange one. And I sold both of them because they're off-centered, as you guys know. And I still have the yellow one. And so I guess we make a good pair as being co-hosts, and you own one and I own one. I still get to find the orange one centered. So, oh gosh, it's awesome.
Yeah. Right. That's like with Mickey Mantle, that his, you know, 52 tops are, well, that's his first tops card. So it's like a rookie card. Well, you know, if you use that same logic, this would be Ted Williams' rookie card too.
Yeah. So,
it's nuts. But there we go. All right.
Okay. My next ones, we're going down the modern hole because I love modern cards now. You know what? That, not to take this sidetracked or anything, but there's like YouTube. We tend to, us on YouTube, maybe podcast too and everything, we tend to give a lot of credit to professional collectors, or these so-called professional collectors, even someone like me, who's been collecting for 40 years, you know, since I can remember, the first memory of my life, basically. There, to me, collecting is not brain surgery. It's not something that you've been doing it for a long time and you're better at it. There's no such thing as being a better collector than somebody else. This is collecting cardboard. But with all that said, there's always something to learn from people. And I understand now, like being on YouTube and not collecting by myself anymore. I've learned things, and the history of cards says something. And this next card for modern, since I haven't been collecting modern for the last 20 years, I was ripping modern like crazy in the 2000s. I talk about it all the time. One year I probably spent 40 grand ripping cards. I sold 20 grand of baseball cards, all modern, during that period in 1 year. So that's how much I was buying, never getting my money back, just having a good time with it. But I wasn't collecting it. But what I learned after jumping back into it over the last year is that, yes, things do demand a premium. And yes, things should demand a premium. And I learned that not through guys I've been collecting you know, professional collectors, you just kind of figure out on your own, but just you watch channels, you're like, oh, I like that. Why? I love Topps Gold. And I decided when I started collecting modern, I was only going to buy numbered cards, and I was only going to buy gold cards because golds have a history. And you don't need to have a rocket science degree in collecting to understand that. You don't need to be a professional to collect things. We're collecting. But I think it does say something when you start going down the modern rabbit hole to find a lane and stick with it. And to me, I'm obsessed with gold. And in 2001, the very first gold cards that were numbered were 2001, and they were numbered to the year. And Topps had other gold cards like 92 winners and others. But this was the first year they ever decided to number them. And this is the first year of two Hall of Fame rookie card, two Hall of Fame players on one combo card. So this touches every box that I ever dreamed about. I mean, that will as soon as Pujols makes the Hall of Fame. But this is like one of those glorious magical cards in my collection. One of my favorite cards in my entire collection. When I bought this, I thought I was spending so much money, and I've seen what the prices go for now, and I'm like, whew, I'm glad I bought it when I did. And to have this card on display in my room, it just brings me a lot of pleasure. But I know I really went off tangent with the whole professional thing. It's been really hitting me lately. I haven't done a video in a long time. Been really busy with taxes and everything. And I just hear a lot of people giving a lot of credit to guys that have been collecting for a long time. And I really want to reiterate the fact that this is collecting. When I buy a card, I want it to become worth more in the future. And I think about money all the time, just like when I spent money on this card. But in the end, we're buying cardboard, and you don't have to be a professional to figure out what is a highly sought after card, and you'll learn really fast. And in the modern thing, you don't need to be a pro. Just find a lane and just go after that and have conviction in it. So I have conviction for gold cards, and that's what I collected on Mike Trout, his run. And I collect one of every year of the ones that are numbered to the year. I love it. So that's how it's headed. Sorry I went on that side tangent. I love talking about cards. What's on my mind?
First of all, I could never see that card too many times. That is an awesome card. Those two guys on the same card, the goal, and that's a rookie, right? That's a rookie card,
yeah,
right? Yeah. So you got a rookie card of two of the best ever. Two really. I think players that will even be more and more appreciated as time goes on too, those two guys. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
I love gold, man.
Dude, who doesn't love gold?
I didn't know that. Right? I didn't know that was the first numbered gold cards either. So you're teaching me all these things.
In Topps, at least.
Yeah, in Topps. All right. So speaking of Topps, this will be a quick one because it's the same lines of the last one I showed. This is the first Topps card of Tom Brady. So a lot of people may know that he came into the league in the year 2000. That's his rookie year, 2000. And it's crazy to think about, really. Like, imagine now if Patrick Mahomes didn't have any top or like the whatever the brand, like Panini card, didn't have any Panini cards in 2018, which would be his second year, excuse me, 2018 or his rookie year, 2017. That would just be nuts to think about. But Tom Brady, the best ever, has no Topps cards in 2002 or 2001, his first 2 years in the league. And 2002 Topps here, this is his first Topps card. So it's a very meaningful card and very tough to find in a PSA 10 here too. This is a gem mint copy. I forget how many there are, but there's way less than you would think of this card. And there's a Topps chrome of this, but there's the Topps, the paper, they call it paper, Topps paper, condition sensitive. So there's not many in gem mint. Most of them are off-centered. So yeah, his first Topps card, the best ever, came out 2 years after he came into the league. Pretty crazy.
That is insane. And what I love about football, baseball, I don't know anything about football or football cards in particular, but I see them. That looks just like the 2001 Topps colors, the design. If you saw the one without the gold, this is actually the card, but they stamped the gold on the original card. It's the same. That's the same thing right there in top. So they did it a year later. They seem to do that with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in 2001, Brady, that's his second year. He only has like three major cards across all brands in 2001. Wow. So like, it's pretty crazy. A guy that good, because he came out of nowhere, you know, no one knew he was going to be that good, which it's crazy to think about these days.
Well, so, no one collected cards in 2000, except for me and a couple other friends. Exactly. It felt like that.
There was not nearly as many people.
Ghost town at places. Yeah. That was the era.
All right. Is this your number five right here? Your last
one? Yeah, this is my number five. Okay. So same thing, man. Just if you're scared to get in the modern game and you're a vintage guy like me, don't be scared. Find a lane. It's not hard. You don't need to go study a whole bunch of things. Just pick something, go on Baseballpedia and start diving into where you want to go with it. And I'm sticking with my gold thing and I'm sticking to my man. And just like the Ichiro and Pujols, two guys that I collect, like super collect, I guess, but I collect those two guys. I love those guys. I only have about five guys that I collect. And I mean, that's kind of across the board and vintage and modern, as far as like trying to chase weird stuff with certain guys. And one guy that I chase everything is Mickey Mantle.
Oh yeah.
And this is a 2009 Topps Chrome gold refractor. It's the very first year that Topps ever numbered the gold refractors to 50 as we know it today. So they did gold refractor. You can see the number. They did gold refractors prior to 2009 in Topps Chrome, but they did not number them to 50. So this is the first for Topps. And to this day, they number Topps Chrome's gold to 50. So this is a very iconic set, in my opinion, meaning the gold refractors from 2009 Topps Chrome. And having a Mickey Mantle, knowing there's only 50 of these, and I'm trying to collect all the really rare, in quotes, cards of Mickey Mantle that non-playing days of Topps, this is like a gem of gems to find. So there, I love it. I love it.
One of the best Mantle images of all time right there.
It really is.
It's awesome. And
I think it's during the 51 season when he was going to play shortstop or in preseason. I forgot off the top of my head exactly, but this was his rookie year, I believe. This photo was taken, which is really cool. Don't quote me on that. It's just from reading books and stuff. I haven't actually done research to look at this, but just
a lot of those early photos, like the photo from his, I think his rookie card, the 51 Bowman, the 52 Topps, they were all taken out here in Arizona. That's where they would come for spring training. And I drive by the municipal field. It's still there. And sometimes I'll just like look at it and be like, that's where Mickey Mantle stood when they took his picture for the 52 Topps card. Like it's just cool sometimes to see it. Like drive by. They play spring training games there.
Dude, that's insane. You got to do what Hugo, Signs of the Pastime, does. You know, like that stuff blows my mind. I wish I could stand where Mickey Mantle stood.
So I know,
yeah, that's awesome.
History. All right. So this is my last one. And these are iconic cards from the 90s. I love that era too. And so the most famous of all the parallels, like you know, the famous parallels are the precious metal gems, PMGs. And so I brought out the first PMGs for football, and it's the same for basketball. Football and basketball had, pull this up here. So this is the design. They did reds and greens. This is the red. So these are the first PMGs in 1997. For football, and just crazy looking cards, you know, so different and unique, beautiful designs, just the red, just unbelievable. They made 150 of these in football. So this is numbered to 150.
Dang.
That's in basketball, they're numbered to 100. And there's 10 greens in basketball. The first, like the Michael Jordan green goes for millions of dollars. So these PMGs are just famous in the hobby. And this is the first one that came out for football and basketball. And then baseball didn't have any PMGs in 97. Their first PMG was 98, Metal Universe. and this is the Pedro PMG. They call this the scope, or it's got just a really cool design to it. So the 98 PMG, first ones for baseball. Baseball only had 2 years of PMGs. So while football and basketball had three sets of PMGs, baseball only had two. So if you got a guy that you like to collect during this period, a big chase card in baseball would be either this one or the 99. That's it. They made 2 years of 98 and 99 PMGs. So these are number 250.
Dang.
Number 50 there, Pedro.
I love how it's like, it was sick before, but then when you say the number, just like as a collector, you're like, vintage guys are just like, what does that even mean? But as you know, now that I'm into I knew numbered cards because I was opening packs, and those numbers really like hit the spot. 50 of them in the world. If I try and go find one, it'd probably take me 2 years to find that card.
And the thing about this being in this time period, like you were saying, 1998, the hobby was a ghost town, man, compared to what it is now.
Man's zone.
And this was before grading. This was before breaking. So people think like, oh, it's a card number to 50. Like those number to 50 is nothing now in these new products. But there's a huge difference. Every product gets open now in a break. It goes in a penny sleeve and it goes off to PSA. Back then, number to 50 is like impossible because people weren't grading. A lot of these got probably thrown out or just who knows, they got destroyed. People weren't saving their card. These weren't really even like that looked at the time as like, oh, these are going to be huge cards. Like people know ahead of time, like, oh, the Wemby Black Prism is going to be $1 million card even before it comes out. So people are waiting for it. These cards came out of nowhere, man. Like when they were first coming out, people thought they were cool, but no one had any idea they'd be worth a lot of money someday. So that's why it's so hard to come across these because they are number 50, but the time period that they came out into.
Yeah, dude, it's just awesome. Like to think about, like I don't know who this Wemby guy is that everybody talks about, but a card now comes out and they have like bounties on them. Already worth $1 million.
Yeah.
There's almost no possible way. I mean, it's just me predicting. No possible way that the future of that card's going to be worth more than what it is now. I guess there was the same thing in 98. There were cards you're pulling out in a pack when you were in the hobby that when you pull them from the pack in 98, it was worth a bunch of money. But like you said, there were these hidden gems. And I think the same thing, you can quote me on this, write it down in your book, and in 10, 20 years from now, cards that are we're opening that people are opening right now in 2024, there will be hidden gems. There will be cards that people want to go after, whether it's the chromes number to 50, the golds number to 50, or these ones, the kabooms, or something is hidden in what people are pulling now that in the future people are going to collect. And I think that instead of just going after 100 different refractors, you find a lane and you stick with it, because you can go today, you can buy you go open up a pack of 2024, you pull a gold refractor, top chrome, number to 50, Mike Trout, buy it for $50. You could buy one that's numbered to 25 for, like an orange one for like $25. So technically the orange one's more rare, but the gold one's more sought after. So in the future, things could change. So just, I think it's, you find a lane and you find something that you love and you stick with it and you hold it and you enjoy it. And I love that. I love the hobby right now. Everyone is poo-pooing it for the last couple of years. And I've always been like, no, there's so much fun to be had in this hobby and you can take it in so many different directions. As I did, went from vintage to modern, as you did, went from vintage to the 90s, like, and I'm a 2000s guy. So it's just a blast. And I want people's eyes to be open more and understand their, the collect what you love thing. It's not all what it's cracked up to be. You can love something that is also, you can have conviction that will be worth more in the future. So there's not just collect what you love and have a plan for it to be worth more in the future. If you have that optimism like me and you
Yeah. And to tie it in too, like you said, kabooms or kaboomies as Mike Petty, like, what they're just an example, but something's going to stand out in the future from it does from every era. the PMGs from the 90s, whatever it is that in this era, something's going to stand out. And to tie it in, the first of that will probably be even more chased after. The first year of Prism, the first Kaboom year, or whatever, you know, whatever is the most popular thing, that will be something that most likely will be chased after even more than the other years because it's the first.
Okay, so let's put us both on the spot right now. Let's do right now. Are you collecting any super modern stuff? But, you know, 2020 to now.
No.
Is there anything that you bought?
So the only player that I collect and buy stuff of from that period is Tom Brady.
You have a Kaboom, right?
Yeah, so I do have, I have Kabooms, I have Tom Brady, I have other ones that I've never even shown. I have a Tom Brady Color Blast. Have you ever seen Color Blast?
Oh, okay, yeah, the Color Blast.
I got one of those, man. I got Downtown Tom Brady. I haven't shown them because, honestly, a lot of the people on YouTube, when I do a Tom Brady video of modern stuff, like six people watch it. Like, no one cares. So I'm like, oh, whatever, I'll just save them for myself. You know, I don't need to show my, I'll save it for someone who cares about this stuff, maybe on Instagram or whatever, you know, like, but I don't show a lot of stuff, but yes, I do have cards from, you know, he retired. So I don't really buy 2023 or 20, whatever. I don't even think.
Okay. So I'll finish that question then, since you do buy some.
Yes.
Let's just be on the spot because this will be on record and it's just fun anyways. What cards do you think in the future are going to be, like you have a conviction towards within 2000 to 2024, not individual player, what set, what card, that's it. We could be 100% wrong on this. I have my thoughts, so you can go there. I have a bunch of different ones, but in particular.
So from where, from like the last couple of years?
Last four years.
Well, I'm going to say baseball. Ah, man, I'm not, you can do baseball. I'm going to say with basketball and football, I think, man, this is tough because it's tough to predict. If it was easy to predict, people would, you know, I'm going to go with Color Blast. Okay. I said it before. I think Kaboom's Color Blast, two of those. Now they're not numbered. So that's one potential issue is we don't really know how many are out there, but the way cards are open nowadays, like I think we get an idea which ones are rarer, you know? And so I think, I think that those two might stand the test of time, depending on the player. But Color Blast and Kabooms, I'm going to go with those two.
Okay, good choices. I'm going to go with Topps Gilded. I'm sold on the fact that since I'm a vintage collector, I love the vintage guys. And for me, Topps Gilded, it's not the rookies. I don't care about those guys. I'm buying the Ted Williams and the Jackie Robinsons and the Babe Ruths and the Hank Aarons and those guys because it's so fun to collect these ultra modern shine and knowing that they only produced a certain amount, not that many, and there's only going to be more vintage guys that start collecting modern. It's not going to go reverse. It's not going to be. I mean, there's going to be modern guys that collect vintage, but there's not going to be. Once you're in modern, once you go from vintage and you start collecting modern, there's like no turning back. There's no saying, okay, I'm done. I quit modern again. I'm not going to quit modern ever. I love it. It's so much fun because for me as a vintage guy trying to collect these centered Topps cards, it's so few and in between that I might find one a week looking for 20 hours during the week that I actually want to buy. Where in the meantime, I can buy a $20 modern card. And so I can have two cards shipped to my house a week. You know, I spend $50. And so that's my prediction. I think the Topps Gilded, and even more so, I think the vintage players that are in packs now have a bright future as far as their growth and the monetary value. I think that nobody likes them right now. They're all basically thrown away when you guys are opening them up on shows and I'm like, yeah, I want that one.
Yeah.
So
that's what it's gonna be. It's gonna be something. I'm saying the obvious ones, Kabooms, Color Blast.
Well, you could say Top Field is obvious too.
Yeah, I don't know all of them, you know, but it's gonna be one that I don't even know about. That's like people, there's gonna be videos in the future of breaks where, like you said, the guy's gonna be like, nah, that's nothing. And that's the card that's gonna turn out to be the chase card because those are the ones that whatever, didn't get sent right to PSA, and they were just like, I don't know, whatever. One more, I think gold prisms. you mentioned gold. I think gold prisms in football and basketball, they're numbered to 10. I think those will be cards that people will really want to chase. Now, I don't know if they're going to go up in price because there's a lot of people that feel that way about those. So it's tough to say. I can't tell you about price, but I think people will want to go back. The people that can't afford them now will want to get those gold prisms in the future from this period.
Yeah, I love that. It's hard to, like, you pick kabooms and you pick golds. It's like, they're already big and they're already popular. And I picked Topps Gilded, which is already popular. It's like, it's hard to take a rogue random card, you know.
We'll end it here, but one more thing. I saw this guy on Instagram. I think he's a guy, you know, MK Sports Cards. MK Sports Cards. He's a modern collector, but not just real modern, but like he does 90s stuff and all that. But he shows some incredible cards, and he writes a lot on his posts and stuff and his stories. And I think recently he wrote something that made me think, and he's like, for a card to go up in value over time, does it have to be a card that isn't like hyped up and chased when it came out? Like the PMGs, you know, they weren't like, if it was today and the PMGs were coming out, they'd be like $1 million right out of the pack, and they would probably go down in value. You know what I mean? So that's an interesting question for another day. But anyway, I guess that's it, Dylan. We went 45 minutes. That's a good one.
That was really fun.
We already got a good idea for our next one. We won't spoil it in a couple of weeks, but that will be a fun one coming up on your channel, Double D Vintage Baseball Cards. And guys, that's it. In the comments, let us know what you think about first or any of the stuff we said here tonight.
Thanks, Adam. That was so much fun. Thanks, guys, for watching and listening.
See ya.